Chapter 1. Scavenger Vessel Wealth of Kings, the Solar Void. Silonius keyed the shutters to open. They clanked upwards from the viewport, and the light travelled up his chest until he could feel it on his face. He closed his eyes before the sunlight touched them. He waited and then opened his eyelids slowly. The sun sat beyond a circle of gold-tinted crystal. Its light was so bright that it seemed to be pushing out towards him, pulling him in, filling him up as he looked at it. His eyes adapted to the light, reducing the glare to a flat circle of brilliance. He could not remember the sun under which he had been born. He could remember snatches of the past now, pieces of a life lived in war. But the picture was incomplete, and before a certain point, empty. Psychic reconstruction. He had spoken those words to Alpharius. He was what remained from that process. That knowledge had not been a kind revelation. If anything, it left him feeling empty, a body waiting for blood to live. But that was just a fact, a consequence of what he needed to do, what he needed to be. One of the shard blades spun in his fingers as he looked at the sun. He had brought both blades with him from his hiding place beneath the Imperial Palace, and kept them even after he had shed most of his equipment from that phase of the mission. Like the habit he had developed in the last few days of coming to look at the sun from this deserted tower, the blades had remained with him. He blinked slowly at the sun, his mind calculating where they must be from its brightness and position, and that of the distant stars. The Wealth of Kings did not follow a course, so much as weave through the void between Terra and Sol. They had made a brief rendezvous with three other vessels and stopped at a scavenger station built into a scooped-out asteroid. On each occasion, the ship had lingered for only the briefest exchange, and every time, Sork had come to Focron with a new data slate or archive device. Silonius knew what each of the devices contained, and he knew why they were important. That had been one of the gifts of his slowly assembling memory. He was not supposed to know, or rather Focron did not know that he knew. He went suddenly still, the blade motionless in his fingers. He heard heartbeats, a paired rhythm, transhuman. Then he heard a hiss of breath and the near silent glide of movement so fluid that they merged into the rumble of the ship and the pulse of air from the vents. He knew who it was before the Legionnaire spoke.
"We are supposed to confine ourselves to the hangar decks," said Focron.
Silonius turned. The Headhunter Prime was standing a pace away, hands clasped casually behind his back. Like Silonius, he had shed his armor and wound himself in a tattered grey shift. A trailing length of fabric covered his head and the lower half of his face. Focron stepped closer and looked through the viewport.
"The day the Legion confines itself to anything is the day we die," said Silonius.
Focron gave a dry snort and then turned to look directly at Silonius.
"We must talk, brother," he said.
Silonius shrugged. He knew that this encounter would have to happen sooner or later. The Legion trained its warriors to never rely on any weapon or structure that could be changed or destroyed. In training and in battle, they changed function, formation, and even rank constantly. The fact that Silonius had joined Focron's team in mid-operation should have meant nothing. But as with so much theory, and even practice, it failed in the face of realities.
"If you think so, brother," Silonius said,
and waited for a rebuke or challenge. Had he made a mistake? Had he allowed Focron to realize more than he needed to?
"Can you believe that it has come to this? That we are here, fighting this war?" asked Focron,
nodding at the image of the sun beyond the porthole. Silonius kept the surprise from his face and began to reply, but Focron spoke before he could.
"When I was sent to sleep beneath Terra's soil, the galaxy was a different shape. This future was unborn. All the wars that might be were theory and contingency. Now they are reality.
Silonius met the stare and thought of all the mission parameters that must still exist in the mind behind those eyes, all the other shapes of war that a different word could have unlocked. Orpheus, Eurydice, Hades.
It was inevitable, brother, he said. It was always going to come to this. A galaxy crowded with sons of war, building a realm from dust, each different, yet each the same. How else could it have ended?
Fokron let out a breath.
Were you sent here before it began? He asked.
Silonius paused, considering how to answer. He could sense the trap in the question. He had no doubt that Fokron was sincere in his struggle to assimilate the current context of his mission, but he was also using it as a cloak. Should he answer with part of the truth, or an outright lie?
No, he said. I was placed on Terra only a year ago.
We must have expended a lot of assets to achieve that.
No doubt.
I will be honest, brother. My original mission parameter did not include an addition to my team.
The mission had to be augmented, replied Silonius.
The human operatives gave you that information at your waking.
Their orders were updated with the rendezvous location by an emergency method hours before they came to wake us.
Are you asking me why I am here?
Fokron nodded.
If you wish to frame it that way.
I do not know.
I knew what I had to do once I woke. Now I follow you. They stared at each other in silence.
We cannot help it, can we?
Said Fokron after a long moment.
Nothing we do is drawn in straight lines. Nothing can be simple. No truth allowed to stand free.
The simple is easy to subvert, brother. Look at what we have done here already and see that truth. The heart of the Imperium, defended by the Seventh Legion, should be inviolable, indomitable. But here we are.
Yes, we are.
Fokron shook his head.
Sometimes I envy them. The fists, I mean.
Truly?
Silonius did not try and hide the surprise in his voice. Was this another test? Another subtle probing of his nature and purpose?
They were always heaped with more honor than they deserved, rewarded for obviousness and labored effort. But that's not what I'm talking about. They have an identity, a culture. They know who they are and what they are.
He brought up his hand and pulled down the fabric that framed his face and turned it fully towards Silonius. It was the image of Alpharius's face, the mirror of Silonius's own.
And what are we? So many masks worn, so many names, so many secrets that the life beneath is forgotten.
We are what we need to be, said Silonius. To win, we are what we need to be.
Fokron turned to look at the sun and nodded, as though to himself. Silonius waited and then spoke when no reply came.
You know what necessity is, brother. Everything is not about what it should be, but what it needs to be.
You have nothing for me, then? No extra orders, no clarification, no word?
No, said Silonius.
Fokron gave a slow nod. For several seconds, neither of them moved. Then Fokron turned from the viewport so that his back was to it. His eyes began to flick across the shadow of the tower chamber. Silonius realized that while Fokron had spoken, his habitual movements had stilled. Now that ceaseless movement was back, as though a switch had been flicked.
Your secrets are yours to keep, brother. They are not why I am here. I came to find you because the next component of the mission is ready to proceed. We need to prepare.
What is it?
Asked Silonius.
There is a signal relay station in the outer mercurial reaches. We will hit it and destroy it.
Silonius shook his head.
There are dozens of primary relay stations in the inner system reaches alone.
Unless we are going to hit them all.
Destruction is only a secondary effect. The confusion it will cause tertiary.
What is the primary objective?
Asked Silonius. even as the answer whispered at the edge of his memory.
We need to light the beacon. A harrowing is coming, and we are its heralds.
What does harrowing mean?
Asked Incarnus. Miss Madra paused what she was doing and looked at the Psyker. Silence and stillness formed as an answer. They were in a small chamber on the Wealth of Kings' lower decks. Rust mottled its walls, and slowly rotating fans stirred the thick air. Hatches hung open in the three doorways leading off. Miss Madra had come there after the mission briefing, mainly to think, but also to strip and clean all of her gear. Pistols and ammunition lay on the top of an upturned crate, oiled components shining from repeated cleansing. There was a lot to think about. She'd intended to be alone, but after a few moments had looked up to find that she'd been joined in her solitude. What had surprised her was who it was. Hecaron. Stripped of armour, tattooed and branded torso bare above a loose pair of black trews, sat on a crate opposite her. He had nodded at her, grinned and begun to disassemble his bolter. She had nodded back in acknowledgement. They had sat, the quiet broken only by the click, snap and slide of weapons coming apart. Then Incarnus had joined them. She had known it was him without looking up. There was just something in the sound of how he moved. He had sat down on a pile of chains against the wall. When neither she nor Hecaron spoke, Incarnus coughed and licked his lips. She felt her teeth clamp shut. Then he had asked the question.
Harrowing? You do not know the term?
Hecaron said, glancing up from the piece of firing mechanism he was oiling with a cloth. There was a sneer to his grin. He shook his head.
Where did we find you?
Incarnus stiffened.
In the same place you find all the people of rare talent who are willing to fight the Emperor,
snapped the Psyker.
I know the meaning of the word harrowing, but unless our mission is to turn the ground with a plough, the connotations of despoilment and destruction are just vague enough that I find myself at a loss.
Hecaron laughed, the sound booming around the chamber. His bare shoulders shook, the tangled tattoos writhing across muscle.
You have courage, human, I will give you that. I almost like you enough to answer.
He shrugged, placed a piece of the bolter down on the black sheet at his feet, picked up another and began to clean it.
But almost is not enough. You have a good grasp of the word. You have operated for the Legion, so you have seen how we do what we do. Use that rare talent to put the pieces together.
Perhaps I should.
Hissed Incarnus, and Miss Madra felt heat spike the air. Frost formed around Incarnus's eyes. Hecaron grunted. The piece of gun mechanism pinged out of his fingers. Miss Madra felt static wash up her arms, and she began to rise, reaching for her only assembled gun. Hecaron was trying to stand. She could see a flash of red at the edge of his ear. Incarnus was grinning, eyes black boreholes in thin circles of ice as he wrapped his mind around Hecaron. A blur passed her, moving faster than she could track. Incarnus spun into the air, a yell of pain ripping out of his mouth. Her ears popped as a shockwave passed over her. She tasted burnt sugar on her teeth. Hands caught Incarnus as he fell, spun him over and slammed him into the deck. Hecaron gasped from where he had struggled to rise, half fell, and then launched himself across the room.
Peace, brother. Said Silonius, his voice low and utterly calm.
He was standing above the whimpering form of Incarnus, a foot on the Psyker's chest. He was looking at Hecaron, hand raised. Miss Madra had not seen him enter the room. He was just there, as though blinked into being.
He was in my mind,
growled Hecaron, a clotting drop of blood running down his right ear.
I can feel him.
He is an asset, brother, said Silonius. An imperfect tool, but one that we need.
Orne appeared at the door, drawn by the noise. Miss Madra saw him look from Incarnus to Hecaron and then to Silonius. She caught the briefest flicker of eyes, and Orne remained where he was. It was only then that she noticed the gun in Orne's hands, held so casually it had somehow seemed less threatening than its bearer. Silonius tilted his head, focusing on Hecaron. The vein in the warrior's neck was beating beneath the inked scales.
"We need him," said Silonius carefully.
Hecaron clenched his teeth, silver glinting. Then he nodded and turned away. Silonius waited a second, then reached down and pulled Incarnus to his feet. He held him by the throat, casually, as though he were holding a bundle of rags rather than a man. Miss Madra could see his fingers were relaxed, but that they were resting over vertebrae, arteries, and trachea. Incarnus was whimpering, blood flowing from broken teeth and nose in a thick flow down his chin and cheeks. Silonius's fingers did not seem to move, but the psyker suddenly became completely still. His pupils were wide in his irisless eyes. Silonius brought Incarnus close, the movement almost gentle. She stared. It was the most delicately violent thing she had ever seen.
"Do not do that again," said Silonius quietly to the psyker.
He dropped Incarnus to the floor, without waiting for a response, and walked to where Orn stood. The two left, leaving Miss Madra the only person to hear Incarnus's breath bubbling between his broken teeth. Signal Relay Station, 18956, Trans-Mercury Debris Shoal. The last thing Silonius saw before the memory took him was the pulse of the compartment lights from the shuttlecraft. The shapes of the rest of the team blinked in his eye, and then the past yanked him away.
"Come with me, brother."
The summons had come as such things always did, without warning. He had been resting, allowing the healing flesh of his body to ache while his mind focused on the movements of stripping his weaponry down to the smallest parts. He sat in the center of an explosion of components arranged in a series of circles. The deck beneath him was still and quiet, the tremor of the Sigma's engines absent. The Grand Cruiser was at anchor in the gas clouds off Shedim. 400 warriors of the Legion and 5,000 oath-bound mortals were aboard the ship, rearming and waiting for their next call to war. Yet despite those numbers, the Sigmar was near silent. Silonius had not fought the quiet, but let it settle into him. And then, just when the quiet was deepest, he had heard the words like a breath on the back of his neck. His hands had frozen as he had heard them. His fingers curled slowly around the firing rod he had been cleaning. With casual unconcern, he had reached beneath a rumpled cloth. His hand and the bolt pistol had come up and around in a single movement and met the gaze of a green eyelet above the vented faceplate of a Crusade-era helm. A warrior stood above him, a bolt gun aimed casually at the deck. The warrior's armor seemed black, the crocodilian scaled blue visible only where the light fell fully upon it. Silonius felt a tingle of admiration and doubt run through his nerves. To approach this close in still air with active power armor, that was a feat of worrying skill. He knew every legionnaire on the ship well enough to identify them from gesture or posture. The warrior who stood before him was none that he knew.
"Come with me," repeated the warrior.
"Who are you?"
asked Silonius, not lowering the pistol.
"You are summoned, brother," the warrior said, and half turned towards the distant chamber door. "By whose will?"
asked Silonius, though he knew the answer. There could only be one answer to how warriors had come aboard his ship without his knowing.
"Your Primarch's will."
Silonius lowered the pistol and rose.
"Follow me," the warrior said.
Silonius blinked and found Incarnus staring at him. The psyker flinched, then put his pale stare elsewhere. The memory was still fresh in Silonius's mind, smudging his perception. He felt fresh understanding and information ache at the edge of his thoughts. The shape of his immediate future altered.
"Coming up on the relay now.
Stand ready," said Ashul from the pilot's chair. The doors to the cockpit hung open on rust-jammed hinges. Readings flashed across the controls of the lighter. In the crew compartment, five figures in power armor rose as one.
"Have they seen us?"
asked Incarnus. The Psyker was still seated, gangling limbs hidden by the bulk of his void suit, his head a bubble of silvered glass.
"Almost certainly," replied Ashul from the cockpit. "But we have to hope that they see too much debris around us to pay much attention."
"Comforting,"
muttered Incarnus. Hecaron growled across the compartment, and Incarnus flinched. Of the human operatives, only Incarnus and Ashul were needed for this mission, and only Incarnus would be going with the strike team once they reached the signal. The rest remained back on the Wealth of Kings, as the scavenger ship drifted through the debris shoal far behind them.
"Here we go," said Ashul. "Let's hope those codes are good."
A second passed, then another, and another. A flat block of pitted metal grew in the view beyond the misted canopy. Signal antennae projected from its upper surface and clustered around a single large dish array. Hangar bay doors opened as they came closer.
"We're clear to dock," said Ashul.
"Stand ready,"
called Fokron, and a wave of movement passed through the strike team as mag harnesses released and weapons were armed.
"What is the garrison strength again?"
asked Incarnus.
"Unknown,"
answered Fokron, without pausing in his last weapon checks.
"And that's not a problem?"
"It is a fact," said Fokron. "Its relevance is limited."
"Oh, yes, of course."
10 seconds,
called Ashul. They pivoted towards the hatch. The compartment light cut out. There was a hiss and then a thump as the lighter settled onto a deck. A ripple of subtle movement passed through the compartment as the four other space marines tensed. Silonius was second in line. Behind his right shoulder, Hecaron activated the charge coils on his culverin. The buzz rang through Silonius's teeth and into his ears. His bolter sat in his hands, his finger on the trigger. He raised it up, muzzle angled just to the right of Fokron's right shoulder to his front. The lighter's hatch hissed open. The crewman on the other side looked up. A bolt shell struck him in the throat and blew his head and shoulders into mist. Fokron charged out of the door. Silonius went with him. Target runes lit in his sight. He fired, switched target and fired again, the roar of the shell merging with the boom of impact. They were in a small hangar. Gantries marched up plasteel walls. Beyond the closing blast doors, he could see the glare of sunlight and the glint of stars. There were guards, human shapes with guns and armor. He killed 4 before he had taken 2 paces. The rest of the team followed close behind him, fanning out and firing, the roaring hiss of weapons a wall of noise. He pivoted, scanning up. A guard in a dun uniform leveled a laslock. Silonius's shot hit the guard in the hand, punched through the gun, and exploded in the stomach beyond. The guard's body ripped in 2. A pulped tangle of flesh fell to the deck. And then there was silence. The 5 space marines remained still for a second, weapons and eyes fixed on the edge of the chamber, waiting.
"Clear,"
called Fokron. Silonius dropped his aim and looked back at the lighter. Its engines were still turning. Incarnus was crouched just inside the door.
"Out,"
Silonius called and gestured. The Psyker did not move, but glanced around him like a startled dog. Something had happened to him since he got into the shuttle. Something that had spooked him. Silonius felt a cold stillness form in his gut and spread out to his skin. Had the Psyker seen something in his mind? He cut the thought loose. There was no time.
"Move now!"
he snarled, and Incarnus jumped as though whipped.
"We have seconds before the alarm goes," growled Hecaron. "Maybe a minute before they send a distress call." "By the time anyone hears it, we will be gone," said Fokron,
flicking a hand signal to Calix. The melter-armed warrior moved forwards. The gun screamed, and the nearest hatchway blasted into a scatter of molten metal. They moved, striding, then running. The alarm began to scream as the last of them cleared the glowing breach. Silonius kept Incarnus in front of him, shoving the human on. Fokron and Orn took the lead, running shoulder to shoulder as the corridor broadened. A pair of guards came through a door in front of them and were dead before they could raise their weapons.
"How close is the transmission cluster?"
called Fokron, as he put a burst of bolt shells into a gun mount that folded out of a wall.
"I don't know,"
shouted Incarnus, panting, his feet struggling to carry him as Silonius pushed him on.
"Somewhere near the core."
Beside Fokron, Orn's hand went to the side of his helm.
Signal from the Wealth of Kings. There is a monitor craft coming into close signal range. A patrol? Asked Fokron.
And Silonius could hear the unspoken second half of the question ring in his mind.
Or do they know we are here? Are they coming for us?
Uncertain, said Orne.
A squall of fire came down the passage to their rear, shot cannon rounds ringing off the walls. Hecaron grunted, stumbled and turned, dropping to one knee, aiming his culverin as shots rang off his battle plate. The Volkite beam speared down the corridor.
Go! He called. I have this!
Silonius was sure he heard a grin in the words. Fokron nodded, and the squad ran on. Incarnus was whimpering now, and Silonius could feel static crawling up his fingers from where his hand held the Psyker's shoulder. The corridor was curving around to the left, and a set of blast doors loomed above them. Yellow and black hazard stripes covered the door's metal. Fokron slowed and flicked a sequence of signals out. Orne peeled away, dropping to the side of the passage to cover both directions. Calix stepped towards the blast door, each movement as unhurried and precise as the movement of an ancient timepiece. The melter lit and stabbed a beam at the door. The metal rippled and began dripping as heat spread from the beam's focal point. The sound of gunfire from down the corridor beat against the whine of the melter gun.
The Wealth of Kings says that the monitor is closing, Orne hissed over the vox. It is still out of weapon range, but not for long.
Faster, said Fokron.
Calix did not answer, but began to pan the melter beam across the door, gouging a glowing slash in the plasteel. One cut, two cuts. Then the beam was gone.
Explosives, said Orne, detaching a cluster of crack grenades from his waist and throwing them to Fokron, who caught them and clamped them to the door beside the yellow-hot wounds. Detonate, he called.
A metallic roar filled the corridor. The half-molten and scored doors blew inwards with a sound like an avalanche of metal. Silonius went through the breach and into the space beyond. Droplets of cooling metal pinged from his armor. Pillars of machinery circled the chamber within. Sparks tracked up and down their sides, and he felt static pull at his skin. A tech priest with a face of lenses and brass turned from a column of wires, screens, and key interfaces. He had a pistol in his hand. Silonius's shot ripped the tech priest's gun arm off at the shoulder. He shoved Incarnus forwards. The Psyker stumbled, caught himself, and staggered towards the central column. The tech priest thrashed on the deck, reaching up for Incarnus with its remaining arm. Incarnus lashed a kick into the priest's face, then another, shattering the crystal lenses.
Attend to your task, growled Fokron at
Incarnus, unlocking a canister from his waist and tossing it to the Psyker. The human caught it and began to strip the metal casing from the mass of wires and metal blocks within. He turned to the console and began to move around it, tracing clusters of cable with his fingers, muttering as he gulped breaths. His hands began to dance over keys and switches.
They got a warning signal out, said Incarnus. That monitor craft will know something is wrong, and soon so will everyone else.
Irrelevant, said Fokron. Are you ready to transmit?
Ready,
said Incarnus.
Transmit!
Incarnus's movements became a spider dance, his breathing hard. The pillars of machinery pulsed. Coils of fresh sparks rolled up their sides. The air crackled.
Transmitting,
said Incarnus. Fokron turned to Calix.
Join Hecaron. Make sure the route back to the shuttle is clear.
Calix went to the wreckage of the door and ducked through. Incarnus had begun connecting cables to the mass of wires and metal blocks. Fokron turned to Silonius and nodded.
Set the charges.
Silonius unfastened a bandolier from his back and began to move around the chamber, clamping charges in place.
And the monitor craft is approaching weapon range, came Orne's voice across the vox. If we do not get clear within the next 370 seconds, we are not getting clear at all.
Fokron began to reply as a roar of gunfire rolled from the corridor.
We're taking fire from both directions, said Orne. This place has a larger garrison than we thought, and they seem to be of above-average competence. Hold, said Fokron. We're coming.
He looked at Incarnus and Silonius. The human spoke before being asked.
Not ready yet. If you want this signal burst to reach its target, I need more time.
3 more charges, said Silonius, as he moved to the next charge.
20 seconds, said Fokron, moving towards the door, bolter ready.
Silonius paused over the charges he had already set. Incarnus finished connecting the device to the console and began keying controls and flicking switches. Silonius moved closer, but the human did not seem to notice. The machine columns pulsed, and the central control gave a clatter of cogs. Out on the hull of the station, dishes rotated and aimed at the darkness. Incarnus pressed a last series of controls.
"It's loose,"
Incarnus said, and only then seemed to notice Silonius standing above him. He hesitated, a note of uncertainty in his voice.
"We must
swing the array," said Silonius. "Inner system transmission, broad focus."
"But now."
Incarnus flinched back and began to work the consoles, swaying with every movement. Silonius pulled the blade that had been with him since he woke up beneath the palace. He held it up. The light of the sparks spread over its edge. He saw the symbols, hidden in the patina of the metal, etched into hair-thin scratches, codes, directions, frequencies. He pulled Incarnus aside. The human fell with a cry. Silonius's hands moved across the controls, faster and faster.
"What?"
yelped Incarnus, the words dying on his lips. Silonius keyed the final command, turned and pulled the human to his feet. The machine sparked and whined as a third signal loosed from the signal array.
"Move!"
Incarnus shuddered and began to limp forwards.
"We are withdrawing,"
came Fokron's voice across the vox. Silonius grabbed the psycho's arm, lifted him from his feet, and began to run. Fokron was in the corridor outside, firing bursts into the dark. Explosions burst in the distance, and lasfire scattered past them. He glanced at Silonius, fired a last burst, stood and began to run as well. Silonius triggered the charges after 25 paces. There was an instant in which nothing happened, and then a series of rumbles rocked the floor and shivered through the air, drowning the sound of gunfire.
"Was the second signal sent?" called Fokron.
"It was sent," said Silonius.
Incarnus gave a small whimper. They ran on, joining with Calyx and Hecaron, and charging back along the route to the hangar. In the hangar, Ashul had the lighter hovering off the deck, engines pulsing with restrained power. Orn dropped from a gantry. Fokron was the last on board, vaulting onto the ramp as the lighter pivoted about. The engine shrieked, and the lighter punched into the void.
"The Wealth of Kings is on an interception course to pick us up," said Ashul from the cockpit. "We should be out of range of the monitor craft, unless it's a lot faster than it looks." "Did they get close enough to identify the Wealth of Kings?"
asked Fokron. "It's difficult to know," Ashul replied. "It's possible." Fokron said nothing more. From where he lay panting on the compartment floor, Incarnus looked up at Silonius for a second, and then looked away. Silonius sat in silence, fresh purpose and secrets turning over in his head.